Ladies and gentlemen, this is Joe Cristiano. I'm your host for Liberty Talk Radio. We are having a problem this evening. If those of you who try to get on via the internet on our streaming part of the program, we are inoperable. We don't know why, but we'll have to get that fixed. But we are available through Blog Talk Radio. Our numbers remain the same, though. Please call in with your questions, 888-773-4496. 888-773-4496. Of course, your comments are always welcome to comments at libertytalkradio.com. We are pleased to have with us Andy Sutton, economist and chief strategist with Sutton & Associates, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. He's with us the third Wednesday of each month, and we're pleased that he does return, and we always enjoy having him. Andy, I want to take a stroll down memory lane. My grandfather, who came from the old country and lived here and got a job, and you know, he was a laborer type guy, you know, but he did pretty well. I mean, he had an apartment and things like that, and he paid his own way, never in debt, very modest. He had a saying, and this is something that people today would never understand and would think it's a joke. He used to say, "Before you go out to eat, eat." I mean, think of the mentality. Before you go out to eat, eat. Because back in those days, there was never a guarantee that you were going to. Even if someone invited you over to eat, there was no guarantee there might be food there. I mean, their mentality was one of which everything was sacred to them. You know, everything. Food was critical. If you had food to eat on the table, you really made it big time. You know, I mean, you had it made. Today I go to Starbucks and I show up in my 1996 Subaru with 263,500 miles on it, you know, and I can afford to buy any car I want, but anyway, I went for, you know, and young people show up and they can't be this wealthy. They just can't. And they show up with BMW SUVs. Now, you know how much those things cost? And I think every time I see them, I think of my grandfather, before you go out to eat, and hear this young punk, you know, is getting out of this, you know, $87,000 SUV. Like, this is what he needs, you know, to ride around in. And I go, this can't work. This can't continue. We're assuming we're all going to have jet planes or something like that and then owe money on it. I don't understand where we're going. I just don't understand it.
Well, I can tell you this much. The biggest reason we have that kind of a problem is because basically we've had a Madison Avenue marketing blitz done over the last 30 years that's really shuck and jived people, for lack of a better term. And people allowed this to happen, don't get me wrong, into this idea that wants have become needs. I mean, I think 40 years ago or 30 years ago, we had a better idea of what a need was and what a want was. Like your grandfather with the "before you go out to eat, eat." That was a need. I mean, people understood that very well. Today, I think, you know, we take obviously basic sustenance for granted in a lot of cases. And it's not even that. We take transportation for granted. We take housing for granted. We take a lot of things for granted. And, you know, so our wants are so far up on the scale now that everything that falls below that is a need. And we feel like we need to have these things. And obviously, J.P. Morgan, Citibank, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, they're waiting there with open arms to just monetize that pent-up demand. Here's a credit card, 15%, $20,000 limit. Go have a ball. You know, buy all this stuff, have whatever you want, whatever you think you have to have, go and get it, and then pay $50 a month, or $75 a month, or whatever it is. You need a car? Here's financing. You know, 84 payments. I think they're up to 84 payments now, 84 months on car loans. The cars don't even last that long in a lot of cases. 84 months at $500 a month, or whatever the situation is, and they've got people in the mentality of making payments. And you've got basically a whole country of people here, and I know there's some that aren't, and there's some that are working really hard to get out of that group, but for the most part, you know, and I'm stereotyping, but I'm admitting it, for the most part, we're happy just making payments.
Right. By the way, your girlfriend is
on the... That's where we're at.
Your girlfriend's on the line. Let's see if she has a question for you. Area code 918-697, you're on the air.
That's not my girlfriend, that's your wife.
Aaron, is that you?
Hi, it's me. I appreciate your giving my call in. I just wanted to ask a quickie question. We were talking about net worth of individuals. Is there a number that can represent the net worth of an average American? Is there such a thing as an average American?
Well, it really depends on what your definition of average is. If you want to take and look at, I can give you a number for the average retirement account, the average IRA. The average person over the age of 55 has about $27,000 saved for retirement. That's not obviously net worth, but I got some problems with net worth because oftentimes they count primary residence in there, and I've got kind of a philosophical dispute with that. I really don't think that that should be counted in net worth, and I think that's one of the reasons why we got into the mortgage mess that we did, is because people thought they were going to get rich owning a place to lay their head at night.
Yeah, I agree.
In a lot of cases. So I'm going to evade your question a little bit because I'm not sure how we would characterize what the average person is. I know I can tell you this much. It's not very high. I mean, I'm sure it is something under six figures on the average. You know what I will do? I will try and find some research and see what I can drum up on that in terms of data, you know, as far as what the average net worth is. You know, maybe if we can find 18 to 65-year-olds or something like that, that would give you a better idea. I don't know what that number is off the top of my head.
You know, I would suspect, Andy, and Aaron, stay on the line for a second, please. But I would suspect if people are not allocating money to a 401k plan or the like, where certain monies are being matched, so some of that money is free. When you're not dedicating or allocating money towards something like that, you're certainly not taking that money and putting it in the bank. You're certainly not investing it in anything, any sort of hard asset that would appreciate. It would be very unlikely, because the person who is allocating certain monies to some hard assets or other appreciable type of assets that they could own and appreciate in time would also first invest in a 401k plan where they're getting, in fact, free money in a tax-deferred situation. So I would suspect, and I may be wrong, that people, if they're not investing in their 401k, they ain't saving anything. What do you think of that, Andy?
I think by and large that's probably true. You take somebody who can put up to 10% in, and you know, maybe 5% is matched, or 4% or whatever the situation is. If they're not doing that, they're probably not doing anything else either. So you know, going by, you know, these 55-year-olds that are averaging around $27,000 being saved for retirement, which is not even close. I mean, that's a magnitude of 10 too low.
Right.
For what they're going to need at a minimum, really. If they're not doing that, they're not probably doing much of anything else either. You know, in this situation where, I mean, that's where people got into so many problems, because they had, you know, some of these places in California, they were little condos or townhouses, and they were valued at $750,000, $800,000, and people were counting those as assets, and they were ignoring the fact that they owed almost that much, or sometimes even more, you know, depending on how they financed it, for the mortgage.
Right.
And they were saying, well, that's part of my net worth. Well, yeah, but you got to count the debt in there too.
Right.
You know, so I think you need to, and really for primary residence, you know, somebody buys a house, you've got to lay your head somewhere. You're either going to lay it in the house or you're going to rent an apartment. I mean, that's basically the two choices that you have at this point, or you're going to live with somebody else. But I don't think that primary residences should be counted in net worth just for that reason, because you're spending the money anyway.
Right,
and
I agree.
So what, you sell your house? Okay, and I got an extra $5,000. Well, now what? Now where am I going to sleep tonight? My car? Mm-hmm. You're going to start paying rent, or you're going to buy something else. So it kind of washes out.
Yeah, well, and some people indicate, they say, well, look, I have a mortgage interest tax deduction. I have appreciation of the house, which they don't have anymore, but at one time they did. But I say, wait a minute. When you live in an apartment, you don't need a lawnmower. You don't have to mow your lawn. You don't have to fertilize your lawn. You don't have to water your lawn. You don't have to do all these things. You don't have to repair the roof. So the money that you're getting in this appreciation, in this feel-good getting rich, is really being plowed back into the house for maintenance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because you're still making a mortgage payment. There was, I think, a real false sense of security that you were actually building your net worth and a retirement by just owning your own house, when in fact, in many cases, you were going broke over 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to factor in a lot of different stuff there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I kind of said I just think it's not really the greatest idea. But getting back to Aaron's question, the net worth of the average person, I'd be really surprised if it was over $75,000.
Wow.
I really would.
Wow. Does that surprise you, Aaron?
I mean, I'm basing that on median income levels and savings rates and just kind of gelling that together in my head while we're talking here, and I'm thinking I'd be really surprised if it was much over that. You know, and it might be a situation where, you know, you might have to cleave off the top 1%, 2%, or 3% to get at that meat of the people. You know, obviously you got some of these people have net worths in the tens and hundreds of billions of dollars. You know, they're outliers. They're going to skew the data. You know, so sometimes it makes sense to cleave them out of there. But I just can't see, you know, your average, you know, Mary and Joe Smith being much more off than 75
right.
grand.
Right. Yeah. Aaron, does that answer your question?
Yeah, very, very interesting. If it were me, I would bet lower than that. But one other question, if you don't mind. Can I change the subject a little bit?
Sure.
I just listened to NPR on the way home from Pryor, where my other office is located, and they were explaining that Europe gave out an ability for the bank to borrow billions of dollars, which I can't remember the number right now, and they were calling it Let TARP.
Nice.
But anyway, then they went on to say that this has actually already happened. Argentina and Uruguay have defaulted on their international loans in the past, and that both of them treated their situations differently. Argentina apparently ended up not taking the write down, I guess, the way Uruguay did, but they said that Argentina at this point is not looked upon favorably by the international community and those that could lend to it, and so it cannot borrow, but Uruguay can. Both of them, their economies were improved because of China's desire to import agricultural products. And both of them were big in the ability to apparently grow something or something. Maybe it was cattle, maybe it was food. But both of them had their economies boosted right after their default, just by virtue of luck, actually, because the Chinese economy was beginning to grow. And anyway, so my question is, what will Greece do? Are they, what do you think that they're going to try to maintain their system as they've had it in the past? Are they going to actually cause the austerity measures that they've got in place now to remain in place enough that it will actually help wipe the slate a little bit cleaner, and maybe they can become, you know, back in the good graces of the international economies? again.
Well, here's the situation. And basically what you have going on here is they're little coup d'etats. I mean, usually we think of those as being military. We'll have a rebel group that uprises against the government and overthrows the government. This is being done by banks. And the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, they've been doing this. They routed Argentina. They routed Uruguay. You want to talk about another persona non grata in that regard, and that's Iceland, because the people of Iceland basically told them all to pound sand. They said, we're not going to pay you back because you basically tried to take over our country, so no, we're not paying you back. So you can throw them into that mix too. Greece for now is playing ball. I can tell you this much, the austerity is not going to be enough. Same goes for Italy. These countries are all going broke. Italy needs to borrow $300 billion next year just to make interest payments on its debt.
Interest payments.
Nobody in their right mind is going to lend them $300 billion except the IMF. And they're doing it basically so they can take over. They're basically taking over the future economic activity of these countries. When these countries become owned by banks, then you're pledging future years, decades, generations, whatever, of economic growth to these banks. And that's exactly what's going on here, too. You know, the Fed buys bonds. That's popular. It's in the news. Everybody knows about it. Everybody thinks it's a great thing. No, it's not, because guess what? They own our debt now. That means that they own more and more and more of this country every time they attend an auction. And either by hook or by crook, or whether they do it straight up or whatever the situation is, when they become the bondholder, we are pledging future generations of economic growth to these international bankers. And that is bad news. It's bad news here. It's bad news in Europe. It's bad news down in Argentina. Joe, write this down. You want to get this guy on your show. His name's Adrian Salbucci. I can get you his contact information. He's a friend of mine.
Yeah.
He's from Argentina. He's kind of a big shot down there, I guess. And he really knows his stuff on what happened down there. You need to get him on here and let him tell you and tell the listeners what happened in Argentina.
Okay.
Because it's you never heard that before. I guarantee it.
Okay. I'd love to. Send me an email on that. I'd love to.
I will do that.
The show. Oh, please do. Yeah. Well, we've had you on the line now for over an hour, and let me end up by just asking. I had a question here that I did want to ask you. I forgot what it was. The debate between the inflation and deflation, what do you think is going to happen there?
Well, I mean, I can sum it up quickly. I mean, we should really have a little bit more time to kick that around. But basically, we're in a situation right now. There's a couple of really good arguments on either side. On the side of inflation, obviously you have the debt. There's not enough money in the economy to service the present debt, let alone the future debt. So that obviously argues for inflation. I mean, if you look at an M3 of about $15 trillion, that's the broad measure, and you look at debt of $58 trillion, that really doesn't add up too well. So that lends itself towards inflation. Obviously, inflation is necessary to sustain a fiat monetary system where you have dollars entering the system at interest, so you need more dollars to pay back the original dollars plus the interest. So you have that's an argument for inflation. And then another one is the consolidation of wealth. You know, it's kind of like what you talked about there with the people in the coin stores, you know, going in, you force people to sell the family jewels by using inflation to destroy the purchasing power of their currency, and you're going to be able to consolidate some wealth pretty easily. Those are, I think, the big three on the side of inflation. Now, on the side of deflation, there's a couple big arguments here as well. And the first is basically resetting the monetary system, kind of like what happened back in 1930 to 1933. The Great Depression was a monetary event. It was also a political event. It was a policy event. But the first thing that happened was it was a monetary event. And since we had somebody, we had an enterprise, if you will, at that time that was controlling the monetary environment, you can pretty much attribute that where the blame should go. The second argument for deflation is that would help them to kick the can down the road and kind of keep this thing going a little while longer. You could point to the deflationary period from 2009, the beginning of that year, to the middle of 2010. So we've already experienced some deflation at an aggregate level, but not at a price level. So that's kind of an interesting something that we could kick around at some point. Obviously, the idea of just a plain out default, you know, with USA or some of these other countries would just actually default on the debt. They would just say, you know what, we're not going to pay it. We don't have the money. We're not going to do it. We can't do it, and kind of try to restart that way. And then the last one is deflation would create a unique situation where they would be able to employ means testing on entitlement programs. So in other words, they would say, all right, if you want to get Social Security, Joe Cristiano, we're going to look at your assets, and your assets are over a certain right. amount. So guess
yeah.
what? You don't qualify anymore.
That's right. So to the
you
money I put
in
into
all this yeah. money over your life, but guess what?
Yeah.
We're
going
to give it to somebody else yeah. because they don't have any. So you got kind of a redistribution of wealth going on there.
Yeah.
If there wasn't enough money in the system, that would be a justification to do that kind of a,
right.
a measure.
Right.
So there's a bunch of arguments on both sides, and we could take another hour
right.
and you know go through each of those. Mm-hmm. But where I think it's going to go at this point, I think eventually it's going to end up that we go down the inflationary path. I would not be surprised, however, to see another sustained period of deflation before that happens.
Right. I know Bernanke is of the school fearful of deflation because he studied the Depression, and he has vowed that this would never happen again. And regardless,
yeah, well, his people caused that depression.
You're
that's
right.
That's what
yeah.
he's not telling you.
Exactly. Well, Andy, now we're running at the end of our show. If you'd like to take a moment and tell our listeners how they can reach you and the services that you have, and so they'll know who you are.
All right. Well, basically, my firm, Sutton Associates, is a registered investment advisor here in Pennsylvania. We're fee only, which means that I don't take commissions, I don't sell insurance, I don't do annuities. The only source of income the firm has is fees that clients pay, so people know we're always working with their best interest in mind. I work with a full range of investors, from people who need accounts managed to people who are self-directed but are looking for occasional advice or research or statistical analysis or whatever the situation might be. We've got some really good in-house alternative metrics like the GDP metric. I've got my own misery index, kind of a throwback to the 1980s. And we do a bunch of other stuff here research-wise, and there's people that like to tap into that. I also help with financial planning, budgeting, helping people get out of debt. That's a big thing now. People are trying to get out of debt. They're starting to realize, hey, this is a problem, and I want to get out, but I need help. You know, what are my options? So we do quite a bit of that work. The best way to get in touch with me is you can call me toll-free, 888-633-5420. It's 888-633-5420. Or you can go to our website. That's www.sutton, SUTTON-associates.net. Those are the best ways to get me, and I'll be more than happy to talk to anybody who has questions, comments, or needs some help. We're here.
Very good, and I do recommend that you do, folks, because Andy is very helpful, and he's helped me over the years as well. And as you see on the program, he's one guy who knows what he's talking about and talks in a manner in which is easily understood, which I particularly appreciate. Andy, thank you so much for being on our program once again. We do hope you will accept our invitation to return the third Wednesday of next month, and hopefully things will be working well at that time.
Absolutely, Joe. Hey, Merry Christmas to you. Have a great holiday. It's a pleasure being here, and can't wait till next month.
All right. Thank you so much, Andy. Good night.
Take care. Good night.
Political talk derived from a historical perspective.
Well, folks,
not always palatable, but good food.
What can I say? Andy's great. He knows what he's talking about.
Joe Cristiano,
and I guess this is the end of tonight's program.
Political talk derived from.
Here we go. Okay, we got the right. Things aren't working very well this evening. This is the end of today's program. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Ranch Acres Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street, Tulsa. They may be reached at 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle as well. You know, you feel free, liberated, your life is in your own hands, but with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government's like training wheels. They control the ride and your every move. And let me tell you something, it's no more fun. Ron Paul has a sign that says, this is don't steal. The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well, stay tuned, happy holidays.